just another solid day in California. It's just the way that I was raised in California.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Where you stand?
LA living gridlocked in the fast lane. Trying to strike a rich match, play my cash game. At least a couple degrees from
here in Duval, South Dakota, with Tom Barquette, voice of Cal Poly Athletics. Tom, how's it going?
Going well, Owen. Just hoping for a win. Relaxing in Sioux Falls.
Yeah, so we're in Sioux Falls. The game's in Brookings up there, and you've been to Brookings before. We'll get to that in a second. But first, you know, you just came back last week from your summer hiatus in terms of, you know, broadcasting Cal Poly Athletics. So what did you do this summer? Did you do anything fun? What was your summer like?
You know, I have my soccer store, so that takes up a good part of my time.
Which is, what's that called?
Sloco Soccer. It's on Monterey Street, pretty close to Poly, right two doors up from the 7-Eleven. Okay. So that takes up a good part of my time, and a couple of camping trips with the family, and saw Universal Studios for the first time. Took the daughters there, so it was a pretty relaxing summer. Enjoyed it, and happy to be back working. I don't necessarily call it working, but I enjoy what I do.
Yeah, you're back here now, and we're out in South Dakota. The longest road trip that Cal Poly is going to be taking this year, I think it's the farthest away. Yeah, if I can picture the map of the United States correctly. Last week was kind of a This is just going to be a question straight out. Did the game look in person as flat, especially in the second half, as it looked on TV?
I
know it's kind of a tough question.
I don't know if I'd use flat. I don't think the team looked flat to me, Owen.
Okay.
I just thought New Mexico State in the second half did some things that, as Tim Walsh said, we just didn't make the adjustments. And, you know, we couldn't figure it out right away, and it took some time, and it didn't work out so well. But the first half, I thought the team looked really good in the first half.
I agree.
I was impressed with Corey Garcia. I like how he runs hard. He runs well. He tends to be a little bit too tricky sometimes, and Tim knows that.
Right.
You know, he tells him, you know, one time he had a chance to get the first down, and he decided to bounce outside. So I liked what I saw from Corey Garcia. And I brought this up with Tim, is I liked where the defensive backs looked. I thought Chris Fletcher and Jordan Williams held their own. And I understand it's New Mexico State, and we're probably going to see better players today. But I liked how the defensive backs played in last week's game.
Yeah, I thought they did good in coverage. I mean, that's the one place where I think when you see a FBS school play a FCS school, it's usually with wide receivers against RDBs that Cal Poly has, you know, a significant, very clear, easy to see kind of athletic disadvantage sometimes. You know, whether it was like Fresno State last year, like those guys, those receivers were just stupid. They were so good.
Yeah, it
wasn't close. And Colorado State even at times last year. I mean, you know, you see the athleticism of some of these guys. You're right. I do think those guys definitely, you know, held their own. One of the points that I was making earlier to somebody was the idea of last year and the schedule being so brutal at the beginning of the year in terms of playing Fresno State and Colorado State, I think on back-to-back weeks. And you come out of that and you're just like, maybe not having like official injuries, but guys are, you know, nicked up. Guys are, you know, you get bruised playing football anyway in a regular football season. But when you play two big schools like that back-to-back, you tend to get, like, really nicked up. I don't see that. I see their schedule as being much more favorable in terms of injuries this year potentially too.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I know New Mexico State and South Dakota State aren't close to the bulk, the size, and the depth that Fresno State and Colorado State have. And, you know, you're talking 95 scholarships to 63.
Exactly.
So, and I think individually, like Sullivan Gross can stand up to those guys like he did last year, you know, but beyond that, it gets a little bit tough.
Right.
So I go along with you 100% on that one. I think this schedule this year bodes out to be a little bit more even keeled and allow Cal Poly to do some things that they'd like to do and to work on and not just be, you know, outmanned and outmuscled on a consistent basis.
Right. Yeah, and you know, being able to not just have these first two games be against not Fresno State and Colorado State, but then next week you got the bye. I think it's going to be huge to see, like, okay, you know, coming out of that bye week, when you look at the season as a whole, whatever happens today, coming out of that bye week now, you know, you're talking about a team that has to, you know, that's going to have a little bit of maybe rejuvenation or something. I mean, I can picture, you know, it's like the opposite of last year. Last year, three games in, you're down a quarterback, you're down, you know, other guys who are nicked and bruised up and never essentially recovered throughout the whole season. At this point, you know, you have a chance to get those guys recovered, kind of get a second wind, I think.
Yeah, and I think having a bye in the third week, when you evaluate after the first two, and that's why I'm so anxious to see what happens today, is to what they tweak. Or maybe tweak might be a little bit weak. I mean, maybe they make...
What they change.
Yeah, or if they go for a bigger adjustment, let it be with personnel or scheme. I don't think they're going to go off the board too much with the triple option, though I know a lot of people, you know, would love to see that happen.
You don't have to go off the board with the triple option to make big adjustments within it, right?
No, and I love the offense. I love calling it, and I think it's great. And the one thing, and I would love to see a big bruising fullback in there. I mean, I miss Jake Romanelli so much. I mean, it's nothing... You know, against the guys playing fullback now, you know, the two or three guys you'll see in there. But Jake Romanelli was such a difference maker, right, you know, in this offense. I mean, it was easy. You could give him the ball and he would fall for 3 yards.
Right.
You know, he was so big and so strong. And, you know,
it was a guaranteed something. And and that fullback dive is a guaranteed something.
And it's a big part of the triple option. And, you know, you don't have him, and I don't know if we'll ever get him again or someone like him. But if we do, it's going to make a big difference in the offense. We can talk all we want about throwing it 15, 20, 25 times a game. I don't think that's going to happen, Owen.
Right.
I mean, even if we're behind, we've seen it. We threw the ball seven times last week.
Right.
You know, and we lost
20. And you were behind the whole game, right?
Yeah. So I just, where that fullback is, I don't know, but I that's the one aspect I really like.
Well, maybe Joe Prothro,
yep,
right? He's looking at maybe, I don't know, I think he's a guy who has the body type to be that guy. One interesting stat that I looked up last week after the game was that Brandon Howell got 8 touches in the fullback dive in the first half, and Cal Poly scored 10 points and they were down 14-10. He got 0 fullback dive touches in the whole second half. And they didn't score any points. I'm a huge believer, and you said you missed Jake Romanelli. I'm a huge believer in the fullback dive part of the triple option. I think if you don't make teams suck in a little bit, if you don't make teams at least respect that on some level, then you know it's hard to play outside in the triple option. And I think they've gotten away with it at times in the past few years, you know, with big playmakers on the outside potentially, but I just don't think that's a sustainable way that you can do that. I don't know, and what do I know? But I'm a big fan of the fullback dive.
And how you fix that? You just need a bigger guy, or do you have to tweak it in some way to make the fullback a little bit more effective? I mean, I'm not an X's and O's guy. I've never claimed to be, but like you say and like I say, I mean, it would be nice to have that big powerful guy in there, and or at least the threat of it, and you're. Your thoughts about Brandon Howell last week, I mean, the proof's in the pudding.
Yeah.
You know, he got it 8 times and it worked. Yeah. And then, but they took it away. They took it away in the second half.
Right. They definitely made adjustments. And I almost think it's like a will thing. Like you have to will, you have to be willing to only take 2 yards if that's what you get. You'll only take 3 yards. Jake Romanelli had a lot of 3-yard runs before he broke a 20-yarder. So I think to pound whoever's on the inside of the defensive line, I think is a, I don't know. I just think it's like, it's a very competitive kind of will oriented kind of a thing, and it's always fascinating to me, having you know played high school football and then watching you know a lot of triple option teams in high school and in college levels, you know the will of that fullback dive is something that takes its toll, I feel like, over time that way.
And I think the old school aspect of it too, Owen.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as people run the spreads and
you
know you got 4 or 5 guys going into patterns and no huddle and you run anywhere between 80 and 95 plays a game,
right.
I still think there's something to be said. There's a lot to be said for just power football.
Toughness.
It's what it is.
Yeah.
It's what football is. It's
right.
Power, it's strength. And if you can establish that, I think it goes a long way for wins.
And then you can break outside runs. I know they want to get it outside. They want to get to the corners. They want to get to the edges. They want to have something to play off of when they do play action passes, the 10 times maybe that they throw a game. Those are way more effective when that fullback dive is not even working, when it's being used you know, period, consistently, I think, yeah.
And one of the best plays I've seen run out of the triple option, let it be at the high school level or at this level, is when you've got that fullback and you put the ball in his belly and you take it out
right.
and you take three steps back and throw.
Right.
I mean, we don't see that
right.
much at all from Cal Poly.
Not so far this year.
No, but when you can do that with that threat of the fullback, it's one of the best plays out of the triple option I've seen. Is you put that ball in the fullback's belly,
yeah.
and you look, you read, and you hit your guy downfield for a quick drop back. I tell you, it's a beautiful play.
And you can say what you will about for this Cal Poly offense and losing playmakers, losing Akins and Ivory who aren't on the team right now, but I think the more important. A more important or just as an important loss is the loss of Willie Tucker midway through last mm-hmm. year. I mean, you talk about a guy who's dependable, who can run routes over the middle, who's a dependable hands, he can catch the ball, he can compete at the high levels with whoever he's playing. He caught touchdowns, I think, in Colorado and in Fresno last year, or at least long pass plays. I think, when you look at a loss of a guy like that, I don't know that the offense has recovered from his loss. I feel like that's as big of a loss as any of these other guys.
That's a great point to make. And all you talk about with Willie catching balls, I think he had 18 catches in the five games or the four and a half, whatever it was, before he went out. But one thing Willie did better than any receiver Poly's had recently or even now is Willie blocked better than anybody. And
he took that edge.
Yeah, and yeah. if you're a receiver for Cal Poly and you don't block, you don't play,
yeah.
or you don't play much.
Right.
And Willie could catch, he could run, and he could block. And you're right. He's missed a lot.
He earned those opportunities to catch the balls that he did with the blocking that he made. Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to see South Dakota. So I want to ask you about Brookings because I know it's a place you've been.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the stadium. I'm about to head up there for the first time. Tell me a little bit about the environment. And Brookings, South Dakota.
Well, the stadium, they need a new one.
Okay.
I mean, and they're going to get a new one.
Okay, they are. It's in the works.
Yeah, and from what I read in the local paper today here in Sioux Falls is that this is the last game before they start the metamorphosis or the change to get a new one. They're going to start either breaking down or knocking down or adding things as they go along.
So they're going to redo the current location. They're just going to, maybe take away, a quarter of the stands on one side and then rebuild them kind of thing.
That's kind of the way it sounds, but I'll know more when I get there
sure.
and ask more questions so I can, pass that along on the air.
Yeah.
But the stadium is it's a big high school stadium. It holds about 15,000.
Okay.
You got to walk all the way up the stands to get to the press box, which isn't much.
Right.
But they support their team. They deserve a good stadium. John Stiglmeyer's been here 18 years, and he's done a fantastic job. They're consistently in the top 25, and now they're in the top 10. No, they play good football here. I know we've beat them three times in a row, which is a good tribute to Tim and what Cal Poly does. But I like Brookings. It's home of Daktronics, I believe.
Okay.
They got a big old scoreboard there. And
oh, yeah, that's a scoreboard manufacturer.
Yep.
They better have a big scoreboard
yep.
there.
It's right there out of the factory to them. And I like coming here. We usually come here in around October. I think 08 was our last trip here. And the two previous times we came here, it was the opening weekend of pheasant season.
That's what JD was saying, too. Yeah.
You'd walk through the airport see people walking around with their rifles. I mean, they're in their cases and whatever, and they've got their orange suits on. They're coming, and then they're coming to the game in the second half in their orange, bright hunting safety suits.
Right, because they hunted all day, and now they're going to the game.
Yeah, no, it's a national or a local national kind of event here. The opening of pheasant season, but that's not the case. This weekend, but they like their football. All the
it's probably cooler in October then too. In those other times that you came,
yeah, it was very nice.
Yeah,
we've always had good weather here,
okay.
and granted, this time we chartered in, but it's they like their football here. I mean, we look at North Dakota State. I mean, three straight FCS national championships. North Dakota has been down lately. They've got a new coach, but South Dakota and South Dakota State, they all play good football and they all take it very seriously.
Yeah, it's solid. Four solid teams.
Yeah,
yeah for yeah. sure. So the environment's good generally. JD talked about last week the environment. Our website's called Fansmanship, so I'm going to ask about the fan environments. JD said, for being in the position that they are, New Mexico State's supporters, were pretty solid also.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not a ton of them because you're a you know, lower FBS team, mm-hmm. on the bottom, actually, recently. But that seemed like a pretty good environment for what it was as well.
Yeah, and it was a nice little stadium, 30,000 and change. You know, it was well done. It was in a good spot, you know, right there on the edge of campus. And, you know, I liked it. I mean, and it's hard to believe that, you know, with that nice little facility. And, you know, I know it's maybe tough to get a kid to come to Las Cruces.
Sure.
But it's been, was it 1960 since they've been to a bowl game? I mean, and everybody and their cousin and hairdresser make it to a bowl game nowadays. So that was surprising to me. But I, you know, Tim was saying after the game and even a couple of days later that, you know, they look like they're definitely moving in the right direction, at least to get to 500, which has got to be their first step.
And if you're a Cal Poly fan, you really hope that's the case, that this is actually a team that, you know, Cal Poly was actually favored against in some places, mm-hmm. You know, which is unusual for an FCS team to be favored over an FBS team. You know, I don't know how fair it was to the Mustangs to be favored, but you've got to hope that, hey, this is a team that maybe does win, you know, four or five games at least this year, you know, another four or five games, and then you can say, okay, you know, this wasn't as bad. And that's why they play the games. I mean, that's the beauty of the way that the season plays out, is that a loss maybe at the beginning of the year that you thought was not the greatest loss for Cal Poly fans maybe ends up being not so bad a loss to an FBS team.
Yeah, and you hope. I mean, that's well said. And the fact that we were favored, but in some places, I think I saw we were at -7.
Yeah, a touchdown, yeah.
And, I mean, they didn't know that Chris Judge and Jake Irwin were out, and I'm sure they knew about the, you know, all the crud, you know, that's been going on with the team.
I was surprised that didn't move down after the arrest and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And but it stood pat, and I think, you know, with all the guys that were out because of what happened. But for me, I mean, the biggest impact is not having Matt Fisher there. Derek Sable didn't play last week on the offensive line. Derek will play today. But also without Jake Irwin and Chris Judge on the defensive line, that was huge. I know they're both here today, and I'm not sure how much they're going to play. But that was, you know, Fisher, Irwin, and Judge, those three. I mean, that was, and Sable last week, that's a lot.
It's a big deal. Yeah. I mean, when you're running the triple option, your offensive linemen are not as important, but almost as important as, you know, having a guy that can get to the edge. I mean, you know, you got to be able to block for people, and to not have that. Any other, like, nicks and cuts, bruises that you know, coming into this game? I want to say really quick, before we talk about that, all the more important that you have a bye week next week. When you got guys that are nicked up, when you got guys that are hurt before the season even starts, like Irwin you mentioned, mm-hmm. Chris Judge has been, gosh, talk about bad luck in terms of injuries. Oh, my gosh. You know, you got these guys that have been doing that, you know, all the more reason why that third week, that bye week now, is just, like, the most important thing on the horizon for them.
Yeah, and you know, the Judge and Irwin will play, and I mentioned Derek Sable will play today, but, you know, Matt Fisher will not.
Okay.
And he's probably, from what I hear, 3 to 4 weeks away, and I think that does include the bye week.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to get him back to solidify the offensive line, which I thought was going to be the absolute strength of this team.
And now it looks pretty thin.
Right, absolutely. And I know that's one of the, you know, the travails of an FCS team is that, you know, you just don't have the depth.
Yeah.
You just can't pull one guy after another.
Yeah.
You know, like a Florida, I know that's not a fair example, but, you know, Michigan, I mean, they've got
Alabama.
Yeah, they've got, you know, 3-4 deep on those guys, and they could all start for us.
Right.
Getting Matt Fisher back, I think, is going to be super, super important for this team.
Well, you saw it when they had Leffy last year and not had Leffy. Yeah. I mean, it was just like one guy on the offensive line that made such a difference in terms of the effectiveness of an offense. It's really interesting how that works.
And they had Miles Williams playing. He was a redshirt freshman last week. And, you know, he's undersized. He's about 250, 260 at most.
Yeah.
And he's going to be in there today. You know, I don't know how many plays, you know, with Sable coming back. But he's going to get some time. And, you know, he's going up against, you know, a defensive front. The Dakotas always put big guys out there.
And they had a JUCO transfer, too, on the offensive line this year, right? Cal Poly did, yeah. So, I mean, there's some bodies there. It's a matter of, you know, organizing them and getting them healthy, for sure. Maybe that's the story this year, is keeping guys healthy. You know, your team, you know, starts getting injuries. You know, you have the five knuckleheads. Now you're talking about, you know, a group that maybe looks a little bit thinner in that way. Yeah, for sure. Tell me about well, I was going to ask a question, but I'm looking at the time, and I know that you got some time stuff to do, so I don't want to take up too much of it. Tell me about, like, the running backs. I know that you'd mentioned Corey Garcia, but one thing I'm really excited about, too, is the opportunity for freshmen, guys like Joe Prothro, guys like Lance Mudd or Alex Sushek, to maybe get time at some point, Elias Stokes, guys that are, like, you know, skill position guys who we may or may not see What's your kind of read on how much of those guys we're going to see, I guess, from Tim Walsh?
Well, Mudd and Suchek, you know, I've only seen in practice.
Right.
It looked pretty fast to me.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's I want to see it. Like, I'm so anxious to see what that looks like. And on some level, I'm almost okay with taking, like, the freshman mistakes that might come with playing freshmen, mm-hmm. whether it's fumbles or missed blocks or something like that. I'm almost willing to take the good with the bad. Given the performance that I saw in the second half last week, I kind of want to see the good with the bad, and like, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, and that's easy for us and
to say.
I can know Tim. I mean, if you can, you know how it is. When you get to a fifth year, you're much better than you were your fourth year. It's just, you know, the maturation process and knowing the
third
offense.
Third year better than your second year better than your first. Yeah.
And if you can get that extra year, you know, out of these guys, then you do it. But
so you're talking about like if any of them are redshirting, because certainly Mudd, I think, is still eligible for that. I don't think I saw him on.
No, I don't think he played last week. Right. And Suchek, I know, didn't.
He didn't. Okay. I thought I saw him on special teams or like a number, his number, but that's. Yeah.
I'll ask Eric Burdick to be certain, but I didn't you know, see the participation chart, but I don't see everybody on every play.
Sure, well,
But I know I'd like to.
No, nobody can.
Yeah, there's part of me that, like you, wants to, you know, see them play and see what they can do. But, you know, I've been a Corey Garcia fan since he started running as a redshirt freshman. He runs hard, and he's strong. I mean, you see that guy walk around the hotel lobby, and you know, just in his street clothes, and he takes care of himself.
Yeah.
You know, he's not that big, but he's, you know, he carries his frame well, and I think he uses it well. Yeah. And I think he's only going to get better.
I agree.
I saw last week. And, you know, Chris Nichols is fast and good and smart. You know, he's been around a while.
He's not breaking any tackles, though.
No. I think Corey's got a bigger upside in terms of that regard. And, you know, that's where Chris Stan will be missed, as, you know, he had good speed to get to the edge, and he was strong.
Right.
You know, Chris
Stan, he made people pay for tackling him.
Yeah. And then, so that's where he'll be missed the most.
Yeah.
You know, but Corey Garcia, I like his upside.
Yeah.
You know,
Me too.
I really do.
I think I look at a game like this coming up, and I see a guy like Corey, and if Cal Poly is going to make a win today would be kind of a statement. It would be a huge deal for Cal Poly. Moving forward, it would be a huge deal for the program right now. I just think, you know, a loss doesn't kill you when you play a road game like this, but a win is like given everything that's gone on in the last month and a half, a win would be the, you know, just such a getting a monkey off somebody's back. I mean, this is winning does that. Garcia, if they're going to win, I think has to have some kind of a breakout game, or somebody, some running back has to have, you know, a 100-yard plus breakout game. I don't know that any of them have. I don't know if Corey had. I don't think he had 100 yards in any game last year. But like, you know, a 100-yard game from a guy like him, you know, really toting the ball and carrying the load, breaking away for a couple 20-plus yard runs, you know, something like that. I feel like that's something that maybe has to happen for the Mustangs to get the win today.
Yeah, and I'd like it. And I'd like to see him be the guy to get.
Yeah, totally.
That 100-yard game. And, you know, we haven't mentioned, you know, I know Roland Jackson Jr. is a wide out, but Kenny Mitchell, you know, one of the captains, you know, ran the ball a few times last week. And, you know, Kenny's not the fastest guy in the world to the outside, but he runs hard and he plays smart.
Right.
You know, but I want to go back to what you were just, when you started out before the last question about the wide outs, about this game and a win. You know, I don't get a crystal ball, and I'm not clairvoyant.
Right.
But I've thought about this to where if they win this game, and I think this game could go one way or the other.
Yeah, it's going to be close in the end, I think.
Well, see,
I say that now, and who knows?
When I say one way or the other,
I mean extremely.
Yeah, I think this game we could lose it by 40, but I think we could win it. I know that's all over the board.
No, you're right.
But
you're right.
I think there's that.
You're right.
That potential in this game, because South Dakota State is good.
Right.
But this team being Cal Poly. If they win this game, and I don't mean just keep it close, but I mean if they win this game, I mean monumental, I know, is a strong statement to make.
That's what I'm saying.
But it is. And I talked about this with Eric Burdick, you know, in the hotel room here. If they win this game, it'll be one of Tim's best wins. I mean, outside of maybe the Northern Arizona win to get him into the playoffs a couple years back. But this thing, like you said, with all that's going on and all that continues to go on, I mean, this thing isn't going away.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be in the, it's going to be on your website, and it's going to be in the papers, and it's going to be around a long time.
You saw more arrests for the frat guys the other day. Yeah, I mean, there's stuff happening. Yeah.
So a win today on the road against a quality team. South Dakota State's good.
Yeah.
I mean, last year, would they have a 3,000-yard passer, a 2,000-yard rusher, and a 1,000-yard receiver in one season?
Yeah.
I mean, granted, the quarterback, you know, got injured last week, but they bring in a guy that, against Missouri, was he 19 to 29 or 18 to 29, whatever? You know, he had a great game, you know, kid out of Chabot College. So, you know, this, there's the potential. This, and I'm not big into predictions. I'm not big into saying if you win this, it's going to turn the season around, because it might not. But
it would be, it'd be a big deal.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It'd be huge.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, one thing you're talking about, some of the defenders too. So I just want to go into this really quickly.
Because I talked to you, like, I think at the beginning of last football season or basketball season, it wasn't really as relevant then. Looking back on last year's defense, that defense was really special. I don't think people realize it because they didn't put up gaudy sack numbers. But there were, on fourth down, fourth and two, when teams went for it against that team, they didn't go anywhere. More often than not, they lost yardage. That Northern Arizona game, Northern Arizona was on the doorstep to score more than they did. And the defense, you know, stuffed them, you know, multiple times. When you talk about, you know, the course of the season, they kept them in games that, you know, the Montana game. I mean, that defense was amazing up there. Was it Montana or Montana State up there?
Montana.
Yeah, at Montana that they lost in the end. I mean, that defense was a really, really special defense. And I don't think they ever got the recognition that they deserved. And I think it's sometimes going to be interesting to see, or unfair to the current iterations of this defense, how good that team was last year.
And I, one thing I've learned, and I've said this on many interviews, and even just talking with Tim Walsh on the Tim Walsh Show or just in pregame interviews, there's one thing I've learned in calling Cal Poly football and watching, is that if you have a good defensive line, and I'm not talking just a good one, but a very above average one, your chances of winning go up dramatically. I think it's the most important unit on the field. I know the offensive line is important to protect the quarterback, especially in the triple option, you know, to get guys to the outside. And that's true. But I think the defensive line is the most important unit on the field. And Sullivan Gross, he meant so much to this team, to this program, to that defense.
He played for a lot of last year, not at 100% too, and he was still dominant.
No, and even Andrew Alcaraz last year, you talk about an underrated player, a guy that was good support in every, not every bit of Sullivan Gross, because he wasn't, but he was still very, very good. Losing those two guys is huge. I know they got in Logan Mays this year, but Logan's a little bit undersized, you know, compared to a lot of defensive linemen.
Right.
And Jake Irwin's not up to speed. Chris Judge is not up to speed. So until they get that defensive front, you know, shored up and healthy, you know, it's going to be tough.
But linebackers room to run and make tackles.
And unless we forget what Johnny Millard was. Johnny was so good. I mean, he made it to the final cut for St. Louis.
Right.
I mean, Johnny could go anywhere with good speed. You know, he was 6'3", 240, 250.
Yeah. Yeah.
Johnny was sound. He was smart. He was – his teammates loved him.
But that's what I'm saying. You had like Gross, Alcaraz, Millard, Hubbard, you know, guys who – you know, and there are some of those – you know, some of those defenders from last year are coming back, but – to lose those guys, like to expect them to be as good, as dominant as they were last year is really hard. I think to win this game, Cal Poly's got to put up points, just like straightforward. South Dakota State is going to have guys who can put up points too. And so, you know, in this game of college football, your defense can be good and it can come up with key plays, but it's going to be about putting up points. And to expect a defense to hold South Dakota State to like under 30 points, I think under 30 points would be like a huge monumental, like four touchdowns, a touchdown a quarter to give up against a team like this on average would be just, that would be a great defensive performance.
Yeah, and you talk about if we can keep them under 30 points.
Right.
And I don't know how we score 30.
That's what I'm saying. But that's what I'm saying. So to score 30, you're going to have, you know, Corey Garcia rush for 120, 130 yards. You're going to have to work, or Chris Brown do the same thing. I mean, there's going to have to be some amount of guys stepping out a little bit out of their comfort zone, a little bit out of what we're used to seeing out of them numbers-wise. Because, you know, I can see Corey Garcia getting 70 or 80 yards in every game. But who's going to take the next step? It's what I love about college athletics. Who's going to take the next step from going, you know, from being a good backup, you know, fill-in guy or Chris Brown being a guy who can rush for 60 or 70 yards to making every right decision? You know, the difference between Chris Brown and Andre Broaddus, for instance, you know, when you kind of start to see, there was a moment probably when Andre made a jump from being a guy who was okay and kind of dependable to being really dependable and amazing. You know, and I think there are a number of guys on Cal Poly who could either make that jump or we're going to see more performances like we saw last week, I think.
Yeah, glad you brought up Andre Broaddus. And actually, when you mentioned Alex Hubbard earlier, I loved Alex Hubbard last year. I mean, he was such a fun player to watch. I mean, he was outwardly passionate in what he did on that football field. He looked like he was always distracted. He's dancing between plays to the music on the loudspeaker. I mean, you're thinking, come on, get your head in the game.
Right.
But you know, it was.
Yeah, it was.
You know, it was. And he played hard. He played with an enthusiasm. Yeah. I think that was unparalleled to
sacrifice.
Most, to most any athlete. I've seen it. And when you mentioned Andre Broaddus, you know, Tim Walsh called him a winner. And when he left, and, you know, then the four-man quarterback battle, and then this year the two-man
and
quarterback battle.
Broaddus on offense, but Kenneth Jackson on defense, too, that year.
Oh, Kenny was fantastic.
The more perspective you have on players like that, the more you realize, well, actually, I kind of took them for granted, too, you know, when there isn't that guy who has stepped up yet on the current team too. So I think there's so much opportunity today, Tom, like to do things. There's so much opportunity at the beginning of this year to take the next step to get to that next level, and hopefully they can do that.
Yeah, and I loved Andre, and Andre was just a tough, hard-nosed winner, old school of a ball player. I mean, he wanted the football. He wasn't afraid to pitch it. You know, and he got those extra yards, you know, with his scrambling ability, and his team united around him. And that's what I want to see from Chris Brown.
Yeah.
You know, Chris, you know, he's fast, he's quick, he's an electrifying player.
Right.
You know, but I want to see Chris, I mean, just take some guys on.
Right.
You know, I want to see him just put his head down, square up his shoulders, and just take these guys on. He's fast, and he can run around you, and he can run by you. But I just think in this kind of offense, when the quarterback does that, you know, his teammates, they'll notice.
Right.
And their heads will turn, and I think they'll play a little bit better.
Yeah.
And whether it's Chris or Dan or whomever, but somebody.
Or even some running backs like Joe Prothro, I think, could be a guy who does that on a consistent basis.
Yeah. Nothing brings
Brandon
out.
Howell, you know, those – that gets other players pumped.
Yeah, nothing brings out, you know, a winning attitude or a higher attitude than toughness in football. I mean, we've talked earlier in this podcast about, you know, the spread formation and, you know, the four or five guys into the pattern.
Yeah.
And it's fun to watch. You know, it's fast. It's cute at sometimes.
Sometimes it wins when you have certain personnel.
It does. Yeah. And I know a lot of people talk about it's entertaining and it brings fans you know, in there, and you know, whatever else, and you know, that's all fine. It all sounds good, but there still is no substitute for hard-nosed, tough football. I mean, can you blend the two? Sure, but it goes back to the whole Jake Romanelli and good old Matt Rule on. I mean, Matt was like that. I mean, you gave Matt the ball, and Matt didn't know how to run sideways. It took him too much time to shift his body weight. You know, but Matt got after it.
Yeah.
You know, and he could knock guys over.
Yeah.
And I think when that becomes more prominent in this triple option offense with this Cal Poly Mustang team, and I don't know where it's coming from, Owen.
Yeah,
I don't know who's going
to
give it.
Somebody's got to if they're going to score points.
Total.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see. Tom, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know it's a busy time when you're out here on the road and getting up to the stadium, and I hope you have a good call tonight, and we really appreciate you coming on whenever you do.
Always my pleasure.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. Signs out on